Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hey guys, welcome back to the channel. I'm your host, Matt Tardio, and today's episode is being sponsored by Ghostbed. Today, we're going to be going over a report that got posted today on the UN's website by a Human Rights Council Commission of Inquiry. And truthfully, the first thing that we need to understand is where this Commission of Inquiry into Human Rights came from in the first place. According to this article from the Jerusalem Center of Public Affairs, in May of 2021, after an 11-day conflict between Palestinian terrorists in Gaza and the Israelis, the UN had established a Commission of Inquiry on Israel with a permanent ongoing mandate to ferret out systematic discrimination and repression. Now, before we go over their findings, we're going to take a look at the three members on this Commission of Inquiry. First up on the list is going to be Ms. Navathem Pillay from South Africa. After that, we're going to take a look at Mr. Maloon Kathori from India. And then following that, we're going to look at Chris Sidoti from Australia.
From the evidence we've already gathered, we are concluding that this is indiscriminate attacks against civilians, very excessive, and does not conform with the requisites of international law, which is disproportionality and with the focus on protection of civilians. And therefore, we thought this cannot be equated with self-defense. It amounts to collective punishment.
Well, when exactly did she make those statements? Did she make those statements after a very long and prolonged, drawn-out inquiry with lots of evidence mounted up? No, she made those statements on Al Jazeera all the way back in October. This video, that portion of the clip that I just played for you, is actually posted up to Dawn News English on October 28th of 2023, and it's visible to you to watch on YouTube. Now we're going to take a look into Mr. Maloon Kathori out of India. Now, fortunately for those of us who like to do our research, there was plenty of information to find on Mr. Kathori, but this simple document from UN Watch is more than we need. It is titled Anti-Semitism and Discrimination Against Israel and the United at the United Nations. It is dated June 22nd of 2023. And if we simply scroll down to page number 5 in this document, it's actually on page 6, not page 5, excuse me. Last summer in an interview with the anti-Israeli publication Mondweis, Commissioner Maloon Kathori ranted about the Jewish lobby and questioned Israel's right to be a member of the UN. He was condemned by numerous countries on top of UN officials for anti-Semitism, yet has remained in his post. In June 2023, Kathori complained that the Western media was an obstacle to his work and of biased reporting by BBC, New York Times, and Washington Post, and there are many others almost verging towards fake news. And to get an answer on exactly what he said, we're going to go right back to the Jerusalem Center of Public Affairs for the article titled The UN Human Rights Council Commission of Inquiry Goes Openly Anti-Semitic. To quote Mr. Kathori, what he actually said was, "I would go as far as to raise the question as why they are even a member of the United Nations." So already on this panel, we have somebody that doesn't believe that Israel should be a member of the UN. And we have somebody that all the way back in October of 2023, before getting presented any substantiating evidence from anybody whatsoever ends up saying that Israel is committing genocide and is violating the laws of proportionality. Well, maybe there's still hope for the third member of the commission. Let's take a look at Chris Sidoti and see if he said anything inappropriate in the past. And fortunately, we don't have to go very far to discover what his mind frame is like. We're going to go back to that exact same article. And in it, it says that Chris Sidoti told the council, "I would like to make only one comment, and that comment relates to the accusation of anti-Semitism." He said he was, quote unquote, outraged because, quote, "accusations of anti-Semitism are thrown around like rice at a wedding," end quote. Now, I would like to tell you that Mr. Sidoti was the only one that actually made a comment about anti-Semitic marks being thrown around like rice at a wedding, but down deeper inside that exact same article, we can see Ms. Pillay actually said the exact same thing. She said Pillay lectured the Israeli ambassador about, quote, "Jews who felt they experienced anti-Semitism," end quote. And she doubled down on the remarks of Sidoti that, quote, "accusations of anti-Semitism are thrown around like rice at a wedding," end quote. So unfortunately, when we start looking at this report, it looks like the members on the council itself are not exactly the most unbiased that we would like to have when it comes to this reporting. Now, to be fair, early on inside of this report, it actually does document a lot of the crimes that have been committed by Hamas. And for that, we're going to go over it in a separate video. This video, we are particularly going to take a look at what this council has said about the Israeli military throughout this entire conflict starting on October 7th. The commission actually starts off against Israel with their response to the October 7th attacks, saying that the ISF's response to the attack was initially significantly delayed and in many places totally inadequate. The report goes a little bit deeper into describing just how confused the IDF was on that day and said it actually lacked some command and control. Further, the commission looked into the Hannibal directive employed by the Israeli Defense Force on October 7th. They said such allegations were made in relation to ISF actions in the Nova site, including reports of ISF attack helicopters shooting at Israeli civilian cars, resulting in the killing of Israelis. The commission confirmed the presence of at least 8 attack helicopters in various locations on October 7th, but it could not confirm they shot at civilians or civilian cars, including in the area of the festival. Commission documented one statement by an ISF tank crew confirming the crew had applied the Hannibal directive by shooting at a vehicle which they suspected was transporting abducted ISF soldiers. They also verified information indicating that in at least 2 other cases, ISF had likely applied the Hannibal directive, resulting in the killing of up to 14 Israeli civilians. Again, not they did, but they likely applied the Hannibal directive. One woman was killed by ISF helicopter fire while being abducted from near Os to Gaza by militants. In another case, the commission found that Israeli tank fire killed some or all of the 13 civilian hostages held in a house in Beeri. The commission also faulted Israel for not preserving evidence, saying that the Israeli authorities had, and I quote, "prioritized identifying victims, notifying families, and allowing for burial rather than forensic investigation, leading to evidence of crimes, especially sexual crimes, not being collected and preserved." The commission also notes the loss of potential evidence due to inadequately trained first responders. From there, the commission actually then goes into the response of Israel, talking specifically about its air campaign inside of the Gaza Strip for the weeks following the October 7th attacks. Inside the report, they describe it as such: ISF first launched an intense 6-week air campaign on the Gaza Strip, followed by ground operations over the cover of heavy artillery. The offense's primarily military goals, as publicly stated, were to destroy Hamas completely, including its governmental functions, and to secure the release of Israeli hostages. But troubling enough, going into the second paragraph underneath that section, they actually start talking about numbers that have been reported by the Gaza Health Ministry. By May of 2024, the fatalities of the Gaza Strip were estimated to have exceeded 34,800. Of them, 24,682, including 7,356 kids and 5,419 women, were identified as of 30th of April. Here in our podcast, we love talking about the people who we adore. And when it comes to getting a great night's sleep, we really love the folks over at Ghostbed. As a family-owned company with over 20 years of experience, Ghostbed knows a thing or two about crafting the perfect mattress. They use only the most durable, supportive, and long-lasting materials, so you can trust that your bed will provide you with years of excellent sleep. What sets Ghostbed apart is their signature and patented cooling technology. Say goodbye to those restless, sweaty nights. Every mattress keeps you cool and comfortable so that you can sleep like a dream. When you purchase a Ghostbed mattress, your comfort is guaranteed with their 101-night sleep trial. You can try it out risk-free and experience the difference for yourself. Plus, they offer free shipping and most items ship within 24 hours. Visit ghostbed.com/Rob to save 50% off site-wide. Ghostbed offers high-quality mattresses at a fantastic price. Their number one seller is the Ghostbed Lux, designed with premium memory foam and cutting-edge cooling technology that reacts and adjusts to your body heat as you sleep. Or if you prefer a more hybrid feel with both foam and coils, check out the Ghostbed Flex Hybrid for the perfect blend of comfort and support. If you need any assistance along the way, Ghostbed has a team of dedicated sleep experts ready to help you find the perfect mattress. They'll guide you through the options and ensure you make the best choice for your needs. Ready for a more comfortable night of sleep? Visit ghostbed.com/Rob. And because we're all about sharing the love here on the Speak the Truth podcast, use code Rob to save 50% off your purchase site wide. That's right, 50%. Now, we're going to take a look at a side-by-side comparison. The Associated Press did a very extensive search into the numbers and names that the Gaza Health Ministry actually provides to the public. And this is an article from the Associated Press titled "Takeaways from AP Analysis of Gaza Health Ministry's Death Toll Data." To quote the article, as recently as March, the ministry claimed that over several days that 72% of the dead were women and children, even as underlying data showed the percentage was well below that. Under the section titled "Many Deaths Counted in Gaza Remain Unidentified," the ministry said publicly on April 30th that 34,622 had died in the war. When we compare that to the figures that are stated in the UN report, they said it exceeds 34,800. The Associated Press says that their analysis was based on the 22,961 individuals fully identified at the time by the health ministry with names, genders, ages, and Israeli issued identification numbers. The ministry says 9,940 of the dead, 29% of its April 30th total, were not listed in the data because they remain unidentified. These include bodies not claimed by families, decomposed beyond recognition, or whose records were lost in Israeli raids on hospitals. An additional 1,699 records in the ministry's April data were incomplete, and 22 were duplicates. They were excluded from the AP's analysis. The other part that is not really identified in that article is not only do they pull numbers from media sources, but it likely also includes the number of Hamas fighters that have been killed inside of Gaza. Now, interesting enough, the commission also observed an increasing trend in the number of fatalities of women and children compared with previous hostilities and assesses this to be associated with ISF's air bombardment campaign and its frequent use of explosive weapons, yada, yada, yada. So that goes right back into what the Associated Press article was saying, that the Gaza Health Ministry's number, as far as what they're claiming on women and children being killed inside of this conflict, do not coincide with the data of the names and identification numbers that the Gaza Health Ministry has actually released to the public. They also say they documented tens of attacks where the Dahiya doctrine was used, including on organization convoys and refugee sites. In many of the cases, the commission could not identify military targets as the focus of the attacks. Even when military targets were allegedly present, attacks lacked distinction, proportionality, and precautions, resulting in thousands killed and injured and widespread destruction of entire neighborhoods, including in Jabalia, Al-Ramal, Al-Yarmouk, and Al-Maghzi. This report also goes on to talk about some things that were documented on social media. However, they never said that they investigated it. And I quote, "In another incident from November, ISF soldiers filmed the aftermath of killing of a man in the Al-Shati refugee camp who they admit was unarmed when killed. On 12 November in Al-Ramal neighborhood, a Palestinian woman was shot by a sniper while evacuating and holding the hand of her grandson who is waving a white flag." This report presents no evidence whatsoever that the IDF actually committed any crime, and it also lacks the context of what took place during those shootings. Now, the report does go over a section titled Total Siege. It's going to be Section C. In it, they quote the Defense Minister Gallant, who framed the siege as a measure of retribution, announcing, quote, a complete siege. No electricity, no water, no food, no fuel. We are fighting human animals and we act accordingly. If you scroll down just a little bit more, it says the Israeli Minister of Energy and Infrastructure, Mr. Katz, had allegedly signed an order on 7 October to cut all electrical supplies to the Gaza Strip. On October 8th, the authorities cut off all water supply through the three connection pipelines to Gaza. Between 8 October and 14 November, Israel stopped any fuel entering the territory, citing concerns about potential use by Hamas. The impact of these measures on the availability of electricity and water was immediate. By 14 October, the three water desalination plants, which had previously produced 21 million liters of drinking water a day, were reported to have halted operations due to a lack of electricity and fuel. Israel's cutting of water supply immediately affected more than 650,000 people. The Gaza power plant ceased operation on 11 October after fuel transpiration through the Kerem Shalom crossing was stopped. Now, what this report cleverly leaves out is whether or not Israel is allowed to do that under international law. They do have a valid complaint that if the food, fuel, and water that they're sending into Gaza is actually being used by Hamas, are they still required to give it, even though the enemy can get their hands on it and has in the past? What is actually missing from this article is them saying that Israel doing that is in direct violation of international law, and likely they didn't put it in there because it's simply not. The inquiry then goes deeper, saying that Israeli officials show their intent to instrumentalize the provision of basic necessities, including food and water, to essentially hold the population of the Gaza Strip hostage to political and military objectives, citing since December of 2023, more than 90% of the population in Gaza has faced high acute food insecurities, the most acute situation being reported in northern Gaza. What this article actually fails to cover is whether or not Hamas took part in stealing humanitarian aid from the Palestinian people once it made its way across the border. It goes on to further to state that in March of 2024, 1.1 million people face, and I quote, catastrophic levels of food insecurity inside of Gaza. The commission then looked into the warnings that the IDF has given out to Palestinians. I can't believe I'm actually saying this. The commission was complaining about the warnings that the IDF gave out to the Palestinians to evacuate the area because of the attacks. They said the commission documented and analyzed more than 80 evacuation orders issued by the ISF between 7 October and 30 December of 23, although they did not explicitly use the term safe zones in retaliation for the evacuation areas, instead used the term humanitarian aid zone. It advised civilians to move to these areas for their safety, thereby effectively stating that these areas constitute safe zones with corresponding legal protection. They said the commission finds that the evacuation orders were at times unclear and confusing, and that the time frame provided for the civilian population to evacuate safely was unstated or insufficient, particularly in retaliation to large-scale evacuations. They went on further to state the commission finds that evacuation orders were at times unclear and confusing, and that the time frame provided for the civilian population to evacuate safely was unstated or insufficient, particularly in relation to large-scale evacuations. They also went further into complaining about the evacuation routes themselves, stating that the IDF had checkpoints that were established along the evacuation routes. However, what the commission also fails to mention is that the IDF was looking for well over 200 hostages at the time who were taken into the Gaza Strip and had yet to be released. They then went a little bit deeper, complaining about the IDF attacking inside of the said safe zones. They said the ISF continued attacking designated safe zones, including Rafah and Khan Yunis. The attacks resulted in casualties, including deaths of civilians not taking any direct part in the hostilities. Again, what the commission failed to mention was that the strikes that were taking place inside of the safe zones were against legitimate military targets that directly endangered the lives of IDF service members as well as Israeli civilians. They then further go into this document by complaining, saying that the ISF has essentially mistreated enemy prisoners of war or detainees. Says the ISF forced public stripping and nudity in many locations in humiliating circumstances, including where victims were blindfolded, kneeling, and or with their hands tied behind their back while in their underwear, interrogated or subjected to verbal or physical abuse while fully or partially undressed. They then said that they were filmed and photographed by the ISF doing any of these acts and disseminated the film and photographs. They then described those actions as if they were, and I quote, subjected to sexual harassment. Now, to be clear, the reason the IDF did, in fact, strip those Palestinians down upon detaining them is because they were looking for suicide belts and or suicide vests. However, all of that information is left out inside of this independent report as well. Now, it is very clear to me that the people who were on this commission looking into Israel and whether or not they committed war crimes have a very biased agenda. They left out very, very key reasons for why Israel would do such things. Further, this report provides very little evidence, if any, that Israel actually committed the crimes that they are accused of inside of this article. Again, just because somebody is dead doesn't necessarily mean that they were murdered. There is exceptions to every law, particularly during times of war. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe to the channel. In the next video, I will be talking specifically about the commission's findings when it comes to crimes committed by Hamas on October 7th and since the start of the conflict. Peace, love, and happiness, ladies and gentlemen. God bless. I'm out of here.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.